tonight I have asked Sandy to be our speaker. And one of the gifts of sobriety is being able to give what was freely given to me back to another woman. And Sandy has been an absolute delight to sponsor. And I'm just so excited for her to be here tonight. And yeah. It is a miracle. Welcome, Sandy.
Okay. I have all my props. My name's Sandy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
and I read recently that courage is not the absence of fear, but it's pressing through and trusting God while fear is still present. So tonight I'm trusting God. Okay.
Let me just put this stuff down.
Oh, no, you can take this thing. Okay. I was born in 1955 in a small town of 4,800 people called Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, heart of the Midwest. It's most similar to Winter Park, but with a few more streets like Park Avenue, a beautiful lake. My parents were very well known in town. My grandparents had started a large bakery there. My parents owned it. I worked there. It was just a really idyllic place to grow up, and we had a home on the water, boats, and upper middle class. You know, I never wanted for anything in my life. My parents were highly respected in town, and it was a great gig, you know. And I remember when I was probably in around second grade. I don't know how old you are then, but second grade. And my parents had a big buffet in the dining room. And on that buffet was a crystal decanter and the little glasses that go with it. Very appealing for a little 8-year-old girl. And there was some green liquid in there. And at that age, I remember taking that top off of that decanter and turning that bottle up and sticking my finger in that green liquid and tasting it. And boy, that was good. It was creme de menthe. And I did that a lot when I walked by that buffet. Never really thought about that until preparing for this meeting. And my mom also was a bridge player for, it's kind of an old game, old-fashioned game. I don't even know if ladies play that anymore. But she used to once a month have about 20, 25 ladies over. And they would play bridge and they'd drink. Every drink was a highball back then in that day. And the highball was 7 and 7 whiskey. 7-Up with a maraschino cherry in it. And my mom would have these ladies over to play bridge, and the next day she'd ask me to help her clean up, and I would help by going around when my mom wasn't there in the room, and I would go around and finish off all the glasses of the women who had left highballs, you know, the rest of their highball, you know. And I remember that was tasted good. And my older sister reminded me of that story just this past 2 months ago at Easter. She was down. I have an older brother, an older sister. I'm right in the middle. Two younger sisters. I'm the only alcoholic in the family. My parents never really drank a beer here or there. They're German. And holidays, maybe a highball. Okay. So anyway, really great childhood, great junior high school, all that kind of stuff, and went to high school, and there things started turning around a little bit. The first time I got drunk, I was a freshman in high school. I was in a high school play, and I was a dancer, so, you know, a couple hours of practicing, sweating, really hot and everything, and the best-looking guy in the senior class was kind of hanging around. Some of the guys doing something came and watched the rest of the play practice. And he came up to me, mind you, best looking guy in the senior class, I'm a freshman, and he asked me if I wanted to go to his brother's house. His brother was about 25 years old and well known in town as the guy who did a lot of drugs and drinking and stuff like that, and all of us kids in high school knew his brother. But I'm like, yeah, you know, sure. So I jump in the car, we go over to this guy's house, and I mean, I was so thirsty. The first thing they do is hand me this big, tall glass of clear liquid, and I just started guzzling this thing down, and they're saying, stop, stop, that's vodka, you know, not so fast. I'm like, no, I'm really thirsty, it's good. I drank the whole thing, I stood up and fell down. I was instantly drunk. Instantly drunk. I remember that they took me out in the yard and tried to walk it off. And I was literally seeing things like draping and coming out of the trees. And mind you, there is no that moss that grows down here in trees. I mean, I was seeing things. So, you know, they didn't know what the heck to do. They dropped me off at home. I went upstairs. My parents immediately knew something wasn't right. Anyway, long story short, my mom comes up and she's frantic. There's obviously something wrong with me. I'm standing bare-ass naked in my bedroom, staggering around. I get in bed. My dad comes upstairs. I remember distinctly lying about every single guy in school, telling my dad that's who I was with so I wouldn't get this guy in trouble. Next day, I go to school, and I'm sure I felt like crap. I don't remember it now, but I had to go to school, and oh my God, this guy was like, I can never go out with you because your parents already hate my guts. Your dad wants to kill me. So anyway, that was my first drunk on vodka. And I swore to my parents I would never drink again. And of course, 2 weeks later, I was out drinking beer with the friends and smoking pot and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, you know, but high school went okay. I did end up dating the cutest guy in my class who was drop dead for Tom Cruise. And he never finished school. And, you know, he was like the James Dean, you know, rolled up cigarettes in there. And but handsome as all get out. And anyway, so he got me in some trouble. But I have to be honest with you, I really didn't drink all that much. I smoked a lot of pot, but I drank a couple beers on the weekends and stuff. But in Wisconsin, the drinking age is 18, and I was 18 when I was a senior in high school, and so were some of the other kids in high school, and we thought it would be very cool to go to lunch at bars, okay? So we would go, you know, in our senior year, it was legal. We went and drank at bars and then came back to school. And when I graduated from high school, I went from dating boys in high school to dating, and I use that term very loosely, dating men, older guys, you know, and from drinking beer in cars to drinking highballs in discos and bars. And I can tell you in all honesty that by the end of that summer of 1974, when I graduated from high school and discovered the bars and the guys and all that stuff, and you know, free love, la la la, and all that stuff. I was a dancing queen, you know, we just lost Donna Summer. And, you know, I'll just tell this quick story. I told this not too long ago, but I was out there dancing. I literally was a disco queen. Hey, you know, school plays, dancer, all this kind of stuff. And I was out there with a boyfriend, and everybody's like, my girlfriend said, oh, laugh, and oh, look at her, wow, woo-hoo. And I'm like, I am hot, wow, I am so darn hot, you know, and everybody's watching, all eyes are on me. I must have been out there dancing for 30 minutes, and I looked down, and my tube top was around my waist. And I wasn't wearing a bra, you know, there was no strapless bra. So, anyway, yeah, and of course I went to work at the bakery the next day that my parents owned, small town, 4,800 people, right? And by the time I got to the work, the rumor around town was that Sandy was down at Thumbs Up at dancing on the bar. Tapas. Okay, so that was the story. So, you know, by the end of that summer, the more I drank, the worse my reputation got. The worse my reputation got, the more I drank, and the worse I made it. And by the end of that summer, I was dating a super-duper rich guy and who looked like Wolfman Jack. So we'll just call him Wolfman. You know, not say his real name, but we'll just call him Wolfman. And I went away to college, and I went to one class. I was signed up for a full semester. I went, not like the whole semester just to one class. I went to one class. I showed up like for an hour and 15 minutes in one class in that entire semester. During the week, I would call this guy, and he'd come up to school and get me, and I would live with him for during the week, and then go home on the weekend to my parents' house and pretend that I'd been in school all week. And all we did was party. Eventually, you know, it became obvious I quit school. We just drank. We partied all the time. Well, that relationship ended kind of badly, and I had a girlfriend who'd moved to Florida, and she kept asking me to move down to Florida, and basically, a town of 4,800 you can't get away from a relationship, especially if you're all at the same bars at the same time and stuff. So I had to leave, and I got a one-way ticket to Florida. My parents had paid for another semester of college at, like, I think it was the third school by then, and were just mortified, and I said, I'm leaving. So when I moved to Orlando, I was this little small-town girl, and I knew two people. My girlfriend, who had moved here 2 years earlier, and her live-in boyfriend. That's all I knew. I quickly found the people who drank and started going to the bars around here. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I did get a DUI back when I was 19 in Wisconsin. I found the people who drank in Orlando and started hanging out with them. Did get a job and all that good stuff. I got my second DUI. It was a little different than the first one. The first one I got off because the judge was friends with my parents, so I got nothing. This one down here is a little different. I ended up in jail, crying and screaming all night long, saying, I don't belong here, I don't belong here, you know, I don't belong in a place like this, I come from a good family, you know, and I was like, and I had flip-flops on because I'd been at a pool party all day, so I had a little tank top on and little short shorts and no shoes, so that was, you know, I'd come a long way. Commenced to find the people to drink with here, got a job in an engineering firm, and met my husband, my ex-husband, at this engineering firm. And by that time, to be honest with you, I had like such low self-esteem. I mean, I'd gone from, you know, pretty high self-esteem, good grades in school and stuff like that, till kind of high school, and then college, that was a complete bust. And just the, I call it amorous, my sponsor laughs at me. I was like, you know, I was really amorous when I drank. You know, no, it's just a real slut. And it's the truth of it. You know, I lost so many shoes and jewelry. And I remember coming home one time, I had guy's boots on. You know, I left with really nice high heels, and I came home with this guy's boots on. Yeah, explain that to your folks, you know. So, anyway, I met my future husband, who didn't drink at all. But I didn't think anybody else would want me. And he wanted to marry me, and I thought, well, I better jump on this, you know. Don't get me wrong, I did really, really love him. And but I'd never been asked to be married before. I was just, you know, I've been used quite a bit, and I was a user and a usee. But anyway, he was concerned about the drinking, and said to me one time after I'd gone out with some of the guys at work, we all worked together, but I went out with some of the guys drinking, and the next day I was really hungover, and he and I were supposed to go do something. I said, man, I'm like hungover. He goes, did you go out with the guys last night? It's not my fault you got so drunk. And he goes, you're going to have to decide. It's either your VO, because I'm still drinking the whiskey, VO or me. And I thought, wow, man, I'm going to lose this guy. So I poured it down the sink. We weren't living together. We had two separate places. I poured it down the sink, and I was staying sober. And I think I was staying probably a good 10 months or so. And I don't recall it being hard at that time, even though I was a full-blown alcoholic drinker every day. So anyway, I wasn't drinking, and I married a man 11 years older than me. I was 24. He was 35. He was a widower, so I became an instant stepmother of a 6-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a 12-year-old. And also decided to go back to school, and I worked full-time. Yeah. So, let's just say, after two weeks after the honeymoon, I changed alcohol, but I went back to drinking. But now it was Merlot. And Merlot did give me a headache. So it was, I only drank every other day. But it was, you know, I just could hardly wait for the next day when I could drink. But anyway, I was married for 26 years to this man. And I don't know how he did it, to be honest with you. I could be really ugly and nasty and mean. I was a really bad stepmother. And I had to make amends to my stepchildren when I finally got serious about this program and worked these steps. And that was one of the hardest things I ever had to do. My ex-husband instantly forgave me. The older two girls, they're okay. But the younger one, who I treated very, very badly, I was never physically abusive, but I was horrendously mentally, verbally abusive to this little child who had lost her mother and wanted desperately for me to be her new mommy. And I was not a good mommy. So anyway, I continued to drink. I was hid the drinking, you know, hid the bottles, all that kind of stuff. I was changing the kind of booze I was drinking. Well, Merlot to White Zinfandel, you know, to white wine. You know, still all in the same food group, right? So nevertheless, my husband put up with a lot of cheating. I cheated on him a lot, and my method of getting even with him when he didn't do something I thought that he should be doing or discipline the children the way I thought he should do it was, I'll show you, I'll just drink. And I was in marketing, gave me lots of opportunities, marketing for engineering type business, a lot of opportunities to be around guys and this and that. So I'm ashamed of it. But it's what alcohol, that's part of what alcohol did for me. Anyway, so I'm trying to think of where to go from here. You know, this 26 years is a long time to be married, so you can just imagine what, you know, what this guy went through. But I'm not taking all the blame. There's always two sides to every story. But anyway, I had a girlfriend who... Well, she became my very best friend. She still is today. And she and I became best buddies because we drank like each other. And all my other friends drank, but they didn't drink alcoholically. And my friend Catherine, I know she's praying for me right now in Utah. And I would call her, or she'd call me every day during the work week, and it'd be either her or I, and we'd say, oh, it's 4:30, can you meet me at Dexter's, can you meet me at Houston's? We were like, you know, two peas in a pod, and we'd each leave work, and we'd go drink, and I'd come home drunk. She was single, she'd go home drunk. We just, you know, this was our life, and we thought it was okay. We thought we were really sophisticated and cool. I mean, we really did. And there's somebody else in this room who would often sometimes say, yeah, she started at Houston's but ended up at Wally's. I would have too, except I was married. I had to get home before 11. So anyway, Catherine and I took golf lessons, and we used to take golf lessons on Saturday, and afterwards we'd always go have lunch and drink wine for a couple hours. And this one day, she didn't order any wine. I'm like, what's going on? She goes, well, I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm like, what? She goes, this is poison. She goes, I've come to the realization I'm killing myself. I'm not going to drink anymore. I'm like, oh, my God. Then she commences to tell me that she's been in and out of AA for like 10 years or something. I thought, you know, this is my best friend. I thought I knew everything about her. And I didn't. And we sort of went our separate ways a little bit. But our relationship changed tremendously, as you can imagine, because no longer was she my drinking buddy, and she tried to talk to me about AA, I don't want that. So, nevertheless, about 8 months later, my youngest daughter, who I treated like crap, she had had a baby, and she came over to the house, and I'm sitting on the porch. My usual position on a Sunday afternoon was in the corner on the porch with the fan going, and, you know, probably on who knows what number of, I wasn't drinking wine, now I was drinking vodka. It was much easier to hide in a cup. So now I'm drinking my vodka on a Sunday afternoon. She comes over, and my granddaughter's about 1 year old, just learning to walk. She's kind of teetering along. It's so cute, you know, when they're at that stage on the patio. And I pick up my granddaughter and tell Noelle, my stepdaughter, I said, oh, I'm going to take Cameron in the house. I'm going to take Cameron in the house. And my stepdaughter's eyes got huge, and I saw absolute fear in her eyes, and I knew what the fear was about. She didn't want me taking her baby. She was scared that I was even holding the baby. I was staggering around. I'd been drinking for hours. She didn't want me taking this baby in the house. You know, so I put Cameron down and I went and sat back down. And the next day, I called my girlfriend, Catherine, crying. I said, please take me to that place that you go. I need help. And she brought me here. And I sat in a row along there, and I was shaking, physically shaking, and crying. And at this point, it's just a little sidebar, when we go to play golf and stuff, it would take me 2 minutes to tee up the ball because my hand was like this. At that point, I couldn't hold like a paper cup because there wasn't enough weight to it. I'd have to hold cups like this. I could not hold a cup, and I would try and hide that at work or at home or everything. So I knew I was in bad, bad shape. And so she brought me here, and I just felt like overwhelmed with love. And I knew that because it's a spiritual program, and I'd always believed in God, been raised in a Christian home, that maybe this would help me. And I'll tell you, the first couple of weeks was really rough, but after that, I was like, this isn't so bad. I can do this. I can really do this. And she was pissed because she was like in and out 6 times and it was hard. And she was telling me, she called me one time and says, I've got a resentment against you, Sandy. I'm like, really? And she goes, yes, this is too easy for you. This is not fair. And I'm like, oh, I can't help it. You know, I just don't feel like drinking. And, you know, this one from like a daily drinker. We're going on over 30 years of drinking, you know. And so one guy in here told me one time after my first relapse, I said, how come it was so easy the first time? And he said, the first time was a gift. Ugh, think about that. The first time is a gift. And I threw that gift away the first time. But anyway, so I was sober for 1 year and 3 months. And in that 1 year and 3 months, my first sponsor told me that you don't do any life, major life decisions in the first year of sobriety. No, no, absolutely not. And I'd already said, you know, I had told my sponsor, like, the very first meeting, I want a divorce. I don't love my husband anymore. You know, I should have done this 10 years ago. I just haven't had the courage. And I'll tell you what, I was starting to get courage with this sobriety thing. I felt like I had some control now, you know. So I was plotting and planning. I'm going to divorce this guy. And so anyway, 1 year and 1 month, after my anniversary, I mean, sobriety day, 1 year and 1 month, you know, I'm moving out, you know, I'm moving out of the house. And in the meantime, I'd also taken up a very inappropriate, incredibly inappropriate relationship with a guy who was still married, on the verge of getting divorced. He did, so did I. But anyway, very inappropriate relationship. Now, do you think that was God's will for me in sobriety? I don't think so. He was married, I was still married. I quit going to meetings. Well, I was still very much in love with AA and all the people, but, you know, I had a grip on this, you know. I had this down, you know, and life was kind of good. I had my own townhouse, you know. I hadn't been single in a long time. I used to have dreams about being single, and I'd wake up married and go, oh, crap, you know. So I was just like, this is great. This is great, you know. And I was sober, and it was great, and everything's good. Well, I get a call at work one day, and this very inappropriate relationship person calls me at work and says, I can never see you anymore. I cannot see you anymore. What we've been doing is wrong. And I haven't ever seen him since. And that was August 8th, 2007. August 8th, 2007. I had been sober then 1 year and 3 months. I went hysterical at the office. It was a Tuesday. I went hysterical when I got that phone call. I jumped in my car. I went to the ABC. Oops, lost it.
Battery.
There you go. Okay, I went to the ABC liquor store. I got 2 bottles of wine, commenced to get trashed and drank for the next couple of years. Basically, that's in a nutshell. You know, I drank alcoholically, very alcoholically, every day for the next couple years, because guess what? I didn't even have to hide it anymore. I did not have to hide it. I mean, this was like utopia, right? I work every day, and then I come home into my old cool two-story townhouse. I am so hot, you know, and have my glass of wine and real fancy wine glasses. That made it okay. And so now all of a sudden I'm single. I'm really single. And I
went on Match.com, and I met my future husband on Match.com. People kind of get a kick out of that. But he's not a drinker either. How am I picking these guys to have a serious relationship that do not drink? It's God. It's God. It's definitely God. And so he's not so easygoing as Leroy and so tolerant of this drinking thing. Ron, who's my husband now, and he starts like, you know, you drink an awful lot. Why can't you just have one or two? And I'm like, oh, I can. So I would like white knuckle it with two glasses of wine, but I'd already drank a bottle before I came over. And, you know, it was really rough going there. And so anyway, went out with some girlfriends, got drunk, came home, and he was, well, we weren't living together, but I don't remember all the details, but he finally just said, look, you need some help. And we were actually at that time, we were planning to get married, and he goes like, I'm not going to live like this. His mom was an alcoholic. He's like, I'm not going to live like this. So I said, well, you know what, I'm an alcoholic. He goes, well, don't you think that's something you should have told me before we got engaged? I'm like, well, you know, I thought I had it under control. But I was lying and drinking and all that stuff behind, you know, really bad, you know. He just didn't know how much the consumption really was. And so I came back to AA. And I had a little note thing, but Kim wouldn't let me bring it up here. And I don't remember the exact date, but it was somewhere in early 2009, I came back to AA. And, you know, with all intentions of licking this thing for sure this time. And wasn't really doing it for me. I was doing it for him. And that didn't last very long, work, you know, and, you know, I already kind of reeled him in. We were going to get married, right? And so it wasn't long after that I'm trying to remember the particulars again, but anyway, I just started lying and about the drinking and going to AA and that kind of thing, and by then, I was drinking these wines and these, like, cartons things, and they fit kind of good in a really gigantic purse. So I was drinking those on the way home from work, sitting in the cul-de-sac in our neighborhood, telling my husband, oh, yes, I'm on my way home, honey, working a little late, da-da-da. Really, I was two blocks over in our neighborhood in the cul-de-sac drinking, and became a real closet drinker, I mean, literally. And anyway, you know, you can only hide that stuff for so long. And I got caught again. And then I went back, came back to AA, and I'm trying to think, okay, exactly how this worked. But, okay, so I called Nina, and I said, Nina, you know, I need to go back to AA. And she brought me back to AA, and here I am, third time, you know, picking up a white chip, tail between the legs. Everybody still loved me, you know, but it was having a hard time loving me, myself. And, Oh, yeah, I need to back up just a little bit, sorry. But when you relapse like three times, it's kind of hard to remember dates. And so anyway, this is what happened. I was, you know, sneak drinking and all this stuff and lying about how much, etc. And I started going out to my car in the late afternoon while I was still at work, going to my car and drinking in my car, and then bringing those wine carton thingies in my purse, coming back into the office with that in my purse, and going and getting a soda and pouring it in like a coffee cup, soda, and putting the wine in there because I had an office, I could close the door and all that stuff, and then spending the last hour to an hour and a half at work, you know, drinking. And you know that part in the big book where it says we do these things and we make all these promises and vows and all this stuff? I'm not going to ever drink unless I'm at a party. I'm not going to have it in the house. I vow, but, you know, I'm never going to drink at work. And I said, oh, I'll never do that. You know, I'm never going to, like, drink at work. Well, I was effing drinking at work. That scared the crap out of me, really. And I came back to AA. And that was in March of 2010. Everything was great. I got my new sponsor who was really, really hard on me and made me work the steps. Wow, this is like something new. And so I was committed this time. I knew it was life or death. And, you know, I'm making light of this, but it wasn't funny at all. I was desperate, and I was on the last leg. I mean, now we're talking like 37 years of solid drinking. You know, 37 years. It's a miracle I can even stand up here and put a sentence together. So anyway, that was March of 2010, and I was doing great, and everything was hunky-dory. Life is beautiful. I'm getting the program, working hard with Kim. And on Friday, June 10th of 2010, which just happens to be tomorrow, I got called into the president's office of the architectural firm I worked with, and there was the human resource person sitting there with tears in her eyes because she was a friend of mine, and I was laid off. And you know what? I picked up the spiritual tools and the tools that I learned in here, and the solution work, the steps, pick up the tools. For those of you who are new, there's a toolkit, and you learn about the toolkit. And one of those tools was to, you know, in a crisis, come to AA, pick up the phone, call other alcoholics. I got fired from a building that's right over here in the corner. It used to be the big Wachovia Bank building. I forget what they call it now, but Wells Fargo, I think, or something. But that's where my office was. And I came straight here to a noon meeting. And everybody was praising me. You know, I'm crying. I love it. And everybody's, oh, you know, you're right place. It's great. You know, you're right place. So I felt, you know, okay, I can do this. I'm going to survive, you know, and everything. And you know, 3 months back in the program, and everything was good. You know, I was very resentful, though, I have to say. I mean, it was eating my lunch big time. I'd never had a situation like this. And I was, like, pissed, resentful, hurt, all those emotions. And I was good until I went to the airport to meet a potential client with a company I'd started myself. Meet a potential client who flown in from Chicago at the Orlando airport. And there was my old boss, the president of the architectural firm, in the restaurant at the airport. So we chatted just a little bit, and I'm like, oh, you know. And he gets a phone call. My old boss, he's sitting at a table right here. And I was like, hardly nobody in this restaurant. It's the one, like, upstairs at the airport, you know. And nobody else hardly in the restaurant. He ends up with a table right next to mine and this other guy. And his phone rings. He picks up the phone. He's like, ah! And he comes running over to me. Sandy, Sandy, Sandy. He goes, guess what? That was a phone call from the hospital system in Colorado. That job we were trying to get, you know, we're shortlisted. We're one of the three firms in the United States to have a chance to do a presentation. I was livid because that was the last thing I did when I left that company 3 months earlier was hand him a file and say, here's the file on the hospital in Colorado that I've been working on to get that job. And when he, you know, I got let go and I handed him that file, his last words to me were, wow, you really are good. You know, and here, I didn't get this chance. I was so pissed. I left that airport. I could hardly get through my meeting. I left that airport and I was so mad. I just did the F it's all the way home. F it, F it, F it. I went to Publix. I got some wine. I started drinking. Ron found out, you know, it was pretty obvious, and he said, you gotta call Kim. Man, she was mad. She was mad. So, and you know, I thought I had the program, but you know what? I hadn't surrendered. I had not surrendered. And that, you know, surrender is this, for me, complete surrender was the solution. All right, so I'm back in AM. 90 days. We're not messing around anymore, Sandy. I don't care. You know, I did my 90 in 90 days. I was working this program. I was keeping a journal. I was doing everything right. We were going through this program. And I have to put a caveat in here with my other sponsors and the other times. I've never gotten past step 7. You think that might have been part of the problem the first 2 times? Yeah, I think so. So Kim was bound and determined, and so was I, to work together and get me through all the steps. And so we're going along, and so now we're in, you know, we're in coming down, closing out the year 2010. And I went to take my cat to the vet and forgot to bring him back with his medicine, so I had to run back to get his medicine. And Ron and I were going to go out to Disney and watch the fireworks. It was December 15th of 2010. Or December 14th of 2010, and my birthday was December 11th on a crappy day, like a Tuesday, you know? Huh. Hate to have a birthday like on a day of Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday. And so we decided we'd celebrate my birthday that Saturday, and went back, had to run back to the vets to pick up the medicine that I'd left on the counter, and there's a liquor store in that strip mall right by the vet. And I thought, you know, there's lots of stories in the book about not even thinking. You know, there's a guy in there that we all know who puts whiskey in his milk. Okay, I thought, it'd be kind of fun to watch some fireworks and hang out at Disney with a little buzz on. So I went and got a pint of vodka and put it in my purse. We went out to Disney Village to do a little last-minute Christmas shopping. I went in the bathroom, opened it up, had a swig. One swig, saving it for later. And then we decided to go out to the theme park. So we went and got in the car, got on the tram and all that stuff. We get off the tram. Holy crap. They check your bags. Oh, shit. And when you get off that tram, there's nothing. There's nothing. All those cards, your cards way back there. You can't say, oh, honey, I just think I'm going to put something back in the car. You know, it's a long way back there. It's a tram ride. It's the whole thing. And this big, huge open space. There's no garbage cans anywhere. So what am I going to do? Walk over to the garbage can in this big open place over my purse and throw in a bottle of vodka? You're going to see that. So, you know, and the bathrooms are on. You have to go through the guy checking the bags to get to the bathroom. So I'm like, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Oh, my God, what am I going to do? So I go, and the guy opens it up and says, ma'am, what's this bottle of Smirnoff doing in here? And I'm like, shh, shh. He goes, you have to take out this bottle of Smirnoff. I'm like, he's like, ma'am, don't let me get security. I'm like, oh my God. I said, I can't take it out. I can't take it. He goes, ma'am, I'm going to call security. My husband has worked at Disney for 38 years. He knows everybody. Everybody knows him. He's standing behind me. I had to pull that bottle of vodka out. Couldn't lie about drinking it because there was a swig out of it. I turned around. This is my souvenir of that day. I turned around. And my handsome, wonderful husband was behind me. And I turned around. And I looked at his face, and there was tears rolling down his eyes. He was so disappointed. I didn't know what to say. I said, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And we went in the park, and we sat on a bench. And we talked for like 3 hours. And when we came home, I went in the bedroom and I got on my knees and I basically begged God to kill me now or remove this obsession from me. Please, I begged and pleaded. I was so sorry. I thought I'd surrendered before. But I didn't know what surrender was. I was surrendering that night. And I'm not exaggerating, and I'm not lying to you when I tell you my hands were folded as I pled with God to please relieve me of this terrible obsession. I swear I couldn't take it anymore. And my hands flew apart. And they began to tremble uncontrollably, and I put them together, and they fly out and start shaking again. And this burning sensation went through my body, and it was just burning, hot, hot, hot burning. And just, I thought something was wrong with me. I felt my stomach, and it went through me again. And all I could say was Jesus, 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 over and over and over again. And that was December 15th
of 2010. And God has relieved me of the obsession to drink. I'm so grateful. I am so grateful. And I worked the steps and completed them to the best of my ability. And I keep working them. I keep finding people that I need to make amends to. My youngest daughter, when I got divorced, didn't really want to talk to me anymore. And she's like, you know, you're out of my life. You're not my mother anymore. You were so mean to me. She didn't want me to come to a wedding about a year ago. It was a year ago this month, and sent me a nasty email. But I went to the wedding, my grandson, and she was there, and we hugged and we held each other and cried. She didn't want my amends. But I did the right thing. I stayed sober. I prayed for her. And you know what? She spent New Year's Day with me. She and her husband came over to my house. She met. That wouldn't have happened if I wasn't sober. The solution, everybody is... Well, my solution has been God. God's my solution. God's grace is my solution. And every day I thank Him and I ask for His grace. And every day He's faithful to keep me sober. As long as I keep doing the right thing and what you keep telling me to do, I think I'm going to die sober instead of a drunk. Thank you for letting me share.